both sides really projected a very positive tone about this summit.
The U.S. and Chinese presidents meet. What's next for Trump and Xi? It's Monday, April 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us online as well for VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, India and Bangladesh build ties. Cambodian salt is missing a key ingredient. Asian trade, a Hong Kong train, and making artificial life. We come to life right now on VOA Asia. Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping have concluded their first face-to-face meeting, which took place in Florida at Mr. Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. VOA Mandarin correspondent Li Ya joins us from Florida with more from the meeting and how the two sides fared on some very contentious issues.
I think both sides really projected a very positive tone about this summit. The big thing is that President Trump also accepted the Chinese President Xi's invitation to visit China sometime this year. This is really a great victory for the Chinese side because, as we know, if the two leaders can establish a good personal relationship, talk to each other, then very likely they're going to have more positive interaction between each other. And when they visit each other, they understand each other more. It's really a good thing, I think, for the Chinese side that President Trump has accepted that. We don't see any official like communique or statement after the meeting was over, but slowly, actually, we are seeing more about what has been reached.
While we don't have a lot of details, the economy and trade were among the top issues being discussed.
China and the United States had agreed to a 100-day plan so the two sides can negotiate on trade things. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, he mentioned whenever you have a trade negotiations or talks, it usually takes a long time. It's a very long process. And now the Chinese side has agreed to really accelerate the pace of the talks. And so they try to reach some kind of agreement within 100 days. And Secretary Ross called it really a bold plan. It's really a very positive sign for the U.S. side.
Mr. Trump and Mr. Xi agreed to extend their dialogue through a framework agreement.
I think they've kind of raised the level, like the two presidents will have this kind of a high-level talk, and under that you have four pillars or four areas of dialogue mechanism. They're going to talk about security and diplomacy. They will talk about the comprehensive economic cooperation. Also, there will be law enforcement and cybersecurity, and then like people-to-people and cultural education. So I think those are widely seen as the accomplishments, if you will, from this Trump and Xi summit.
I'm sure they also discussed North Korea at length.
On this issue, my sense is that, you know, the Chinese side expressed the Chinese concerns. We heard Secretary Tillerson say President Trump told Chinese President Xi that the United States understand that the North Korean issue presents some kind of unique challenges and problems to China. So while they agree to cooperate on things, and they also agree on the urgency of the threat of the North Korean nuclear program, Tillerson said, you know, President Trump told Xi, of course, the United States would like to get as much help from China as possible on this issue, but if China cannot provide that kind of help or coordination with the United States, and the United States is perfectly prepared to go alone. As we see, the U.S. has already dispatched, you know, the carrier groups to the Korean Peninsula in anticipation of a possible sixth nuclear test by the North Koreans. And we also see that the North Koreans said the U.S. action is intolerable. I do think the Chinese side also agreed to cooperate as much as possible and, you know, to try to rein in North Korea. But I think the Chinese side is also understands where President Trump stands on this issue.
Wonderful reporting from Li Ya near Mar-a-Lago in Florida. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Coming up on VOA Asia, India and Bangladesh agree on more cooperation. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S. strike group heads toward North Korea. U.S. imposes new sanctions on Eritrea's Navy over North Korea links. Indonesia says militants killed in standoff plan to attack police. Pakistani prosecutor allegedly offered Christians acquittal if they converted. A marathon like no other. Foreigners race through the streets of Pyongyang. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, India and Bangladesh have signed their first ever pact on defense cooperation while deepening economic ties as New Delhi committed a $4.5 billion line of credit to Dhaka for development projects. During the visit to New Delhi by Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced an additional $500 million in credit for Bangladesh to buy military equipment from India.
I'm happy to announce a new concessional line of credit of $4.5 billion for the implementation of projects in priority sectors of Bangladesh. This brings our resources allocation for Bangladesh to more than $8 billion over the past 6 years.
Both leaders reaffirmed their close ties during the Bangladeshi Prime Minister's first visit to India in 7 years, with Modi speaking of a, quote, golden era in their friendship, and Hasina saying their friendly ties would benefit South Asia. The two countries signed 22 agreements, including on civil nuclear cooperation that aims to help Bangladesh develop its civilian nuclear program. Many in New Delhi see the deal for defense cooperation over the next 5 years as a key breakthrough that will help reduce Bangladesh's reliance on China for its military needs. Abdur Rashid, executive director of the Institute of Conflict, Law and Development Studies in Dhaka, says the deal should help achieve a regional balance.
Approximately 80% dependency at this moment we see on China, so it should be brought down. And that actually reduces our vulnerability. And if one is interrupted, we can depend on others.
A new rail link between the Indian city of Kolkata and Kaluna in Bangladesh, a bus link between Kolkata and Dhaka were also inaugurated, while another old rail link was restored to coincide with Hasina's visit. The Bangladeshi leader said the greater connectivity is vital for the region's development. Prime Minister Hasina also has pushed for a key water-sharing agreement. Although that deal has eluded her, she remains optimistic.
I sincerely believe that we shall be able to get India's support in resolving these issues expeditiously.
The two countries have had a close relationship since 1971, when India helped Bangladesh gain independence from Pakistan following a bloody nine-month war. Our thanks to Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi for bringing us this story. Happening now in Asia, the U.S. Navy is sending a strike group toward the Korean Peninsula to bolster U.S. presence there and send a message to North Korea, which this week conducted a ballistic missile test despite U.N. Security Council resolutions banning such launches. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Very happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. A successful program to iodize salt meant that health problems associated with iodine deficiency in Cambodia were largely a thing of the past by the year 2010. But when iodine prices tripled the next year after the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, many salt producers in Cambodia stopped buying the additive, while authorities failed to enforce the law. Robert Carmichael reports for VOA from Phnom Penh. The result became a re-emerging public health issue that has, to date, received little attention.
Each day, Khoi Ratia's salt repackaging business in Phnom Penh processes half a ton of fine salt. Part of the process involves this machine adding a tiny amount of iodine, and that means regular testing to ensure the concentration meets government standards. Iodine is critical for brain development in fetuses, babies and children, and it's essential for proper hormone functioning for everyone. Adding it is cheap, 2 cents per kilogram of salt. Yet, although Retir measures iodine levels, most repackagers, it seems, don't.
I cannot say if other producers are paying attention to this issue. From my side, I am concerned about iodine that has expired.
Almost all of the 80,000 tons of salt produced annually in Cambodia comes from SPCKK, a cooperative in the country's south. By law, SPCKK must iodize all of its salt output. But over the years, several of the iodizing machines it was given broke down, and it hasn't sourced spare parts. Now it has just 4 working machines, and that's not enough. The cooperative's technical chief told VOA its workers often spray iodine by hand, a method that is at best imprecise. The result, almost all of Cambodia's coarse salt contains no iodine, and most fine salt either lacks sufficient iodine or doesn't have any. All of it, however, is labelled as having the regulated amount. Cambodia's iodization program started in the late 1990s when nearly 1 in 5 primary school children had goiters, a condition in which the thyroid gland in the neck swells. With health problems associated with iodine deficiency largely solved by 2010, UNICEF stopped providing iodine. So the UN organization was stunned when research in 2014 found more than 60% of mothers and children were iodine deficient. A report published last year described the findings as, quote, a serious public health problem, end quote, and warned that poorer families and rural families were the worst affected. Arnaud Layou, UNICEF's nutrition specialist, co-authored that report. The consequences are particularly serious for children.
Cambodia is investing a lot of money at the level of the Ministry of Education to improve education of their children. But having a lack of iodine in the brain, it decreases your IQ from 13 points.
The report makes clear that producers are to blame for ignoring a 2003 law on iodizing salt, as are the authorities for failing to enforce the law. The situation, though bad, should start to improve. UNICEF is working with this government subcommittee to devise a certification standard for all producers. Then Keir Hack, who heads the subcommittee on salt iodization, explains how the new licensing system will affect salt producers.
They have to have a machine, iodine powder in stock, a brand name and salt with proper quality in order to get a license. It's a legal enforcement that the ministry has to conduct.
He would not comment on the failure of government agencies to enforce the existing law, but did confirm that no one has been prosecuted. The difficulty for concerned Cambodians is that every bag of salt carries a logo stating that it is iodized. To deal with that, the Ministry of Planning will now test every brand of salt and will place adverts in newspapers to tell people which they can trust. Robert Carmichael for VOA News, Phnom Penh.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Authorities say 6 suspected Islamic militants killed in a standoff with police were planning to attack police officers in Indonesia's East Java province to seek revenge for the arrest of a radical leader. The 6 refused appeals to surrender during the standoff that lasted several hours. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, strong trade ties between the United States and nations in Southeast Asia are under a cloud as a U.S. investigation into trade imbalances gets underway. Regional governments say the apparent policy shift has spurred concern and anxiety. A 90-day investigation by the U.S. Commerce Department of countries with large trade surpluses with the United States follows President Donald Trump's call for a crackdown on foreign importers that, quote, cheat. Among the Asian economies singled out by Trump were those of China, Japan, Thailand, South Korea, Malaysia, India, Taiwan, Indonesia, and Vietnam. Kuala Lumpur-based RHB Research Chief Economist Peck Boon Soon says the U.S. policy revision left Malaysian business cautious on the outlook.
Yes, certainly it remains very uncertain until, you know, he really implements those policies and whether, you know, those policies would be able to actually be implemented. We are watching, you know, these things quite closely, and we will be waiting for more developments before we decide what to do with our forecast on the export.
Malaysia and Vietnam were key participants to the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership, a key component of President Barack Obama's Pivot to Asia policy intended to counter China's growing political and economic influence. President Trump withdrew the United States from the TPP soon after taking office. Vietnam's prime minister criticized the U.S. policy shift. Carl Thayer, a political scientist with the University of New South Wales, says Hanoi is now looking to build trading ties under China's Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership.
Vietnam had its heart and soul in the TPP. They have a massive surplus with the U.S. that almost equals their massive deficit with China. But there's nothing much they can do, so they're being pragmatic and looking at the RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership.
Thayer said Vietnam has banked on a strong U.S. presence in Asia as a counterweight to China's regional influence, especially in the South China Sea.
The more Trump goes his own way, Vietnam's attempt to do a five-power balance, you know, with India, Russia, Japan, as well as China and the U.S., weakens the U.S. side so that Vietnam has a harder time preventing the orbit of, you know, being sucked into China's orbit, you know, in all of this. It needs a strong U.S. action.
He says bilateral relations with Vietnam, built up over the past two decades, are a casualty of the trade shift policy. Our thanks to Ron Corbett in Bangkok for bringing us the story. Developing at this hour in Asia, Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama has said it's up to the Tibetan people to decide whether the institution of the Dalai Lama will continue, and that China cannot decide on his successor. He said he will organize a conference to discuss the issue of the next Dalai Lama before the end of this year. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a big challenge facing Hong Kong's newly elected chief executive, Carrie Lam, is a controversial $11 billion high-speed rail line and station that links the port city with China. Critics have called the project a political time bomb and warned of the fiscal challenges that the project could bring. What's more, Beijing plans to install Chinese police at the station, and that could be Lam's first test of whether she can strike a balance between the interests of China and those of the people of Hong Kong. Joyce Huang's report for VOA is narrated by Bill Ide.
A dramatic promotional video from Hong Kong's MTR Corp paints a sleek and modern picture of the express rail and what the West Kowloon terminus will look like when it is expected to begin operation late next year. State-of-the-art bullet trains and underwater tunnels will allow an estimated 3 million people to travel from Hong Kong to Guangzhou each month. The trip will take less than an hour. For Beijing, the project highlights its vision to make travel to China more efficient and to enhance integration with the port city. But for some Hong Kong residents, the project will be a nightmare.
It will be more Chinese people to come to Hong Kong more easily, and we don't like that.
Chow and others also worry about the impact the project could have on the city's already pricey real estate and goods. Resentment against visitors from China has been simmering for years. And given that the high-speed rail connect will bring even more, it could fuel tensions further. Hong Kong has reportedly agreed to let China station police inside the terminus raising questions about whose laws will be enforced. Under the one country, two systems model, Hong Kong is supposed to maintain its legal autonomy, but that has been increasingly in question in recent years. Younger residents see the project as another effort to exert control over the port city, disguised as business-friendly infrastructure.
As time goes by, if China continues to set up more of these freedom-controlling policies, I think that is getting more and more unacceptable.
Discussions about checkpoint arrangements were recently held between Hong Kong and Chinese authorities, but no details have been released. Observers say local authorities are holding off, fearing a public backlash. They also doubt Hong Kong's new leader, Carrie Lam, will be able to say no to Beijing, which supported her election.
She has to repay the debt, the political debt, to cater for the Western interests and to cater for Beijing's demands. So it's very hard to see that she can have the political clout to stand for the interests of Hong Kong people.
The city's business community has largely welcomed the railway project. For them, the biggest concern is not having Chinese police stationed at the terminus, but speedy customs clearance. For Joyce Huang in Hong Kong, Bill Ide, VOA News.
Despite ethical and safety concerns, researchers say they're getting closer to building life from scratch. Scientists are hoping to synthesize a human genome in the next 10 years, and technology investors are pouring huge amounts of money into the research that might deliver novel drugs, materials, and chemicals. VOA's Deborah Block tells us about some of the projects which were highlighted at a synthetic biology conference in London last week.
It sounds like science fiction. Laboratories working on designer babies and bringing back the extinct woolly mammoth. But both could be a possibility for scientists who are working closer than ever to creating artificial life. At the SynBio Beta conference in London, synthetic biologist Drew Endy said the cost of synthesizing DNA, the building blocks of life, is now less costly, opening up more avenues for research.
When I first started teaching at MIT, building one letter of DNA from scratch cost $4 a letter. Today it's 4 cents a letter. And the consequence of that is I used to order designs for my students, say 20,000 base pairs of DNA. This spring, I'm ordering 10 million base pairs of DNA.
Recently, a group of global researchers announced they are close to building a complete artificial genome for baker's yeast. Endy envisions a new, more productive synthetic yeast 2.0.
Yeast is an important organism because it makes beer, it makes bread and wine and so on. So what might yeast 2.0 be good at making? And the answer is not totally obvious yet, but it seems like it'll be useful for making any medicine that's now sourced from a plant. Any plant natural product, for example, could probably be made in a fermenter with brewing. And yeast 2.0 will make that process more reliable, more readily distributable.
But synthetic biology, like other forms of genetic engineering, has its critics, especially in the areas of the environment and food. Advocates for the research believe this is not justified.
A lot of folks are concerned with things that you might take in. And would that change your DNA? Of course not. Now, you have your own DNA. If you eat an apple or Arctic apple, where we have silenced an enzyme so that when you slice the apple, it doesn't turn brown. You can eat that apple and it tastes as good as any other and probably better.
To help fight the Zika virus, Intrexon is using the technology to create millions of genetically altered mosquitoes. They will be released in Brazil to try to curtail mosquitoes carrying the Zika virus. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
So far, scientists have not been able to synthesize what we do here at VOA, and we thank them for that. And we thank you for listening to The Real Thing. Check us out on Facebook as well at VOA Asia. Be sure to download our podcast while you're there. You can take VOA Asia wherever you go. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.